What?
You noticed the name change?
Yeah, Linda to Jeffrey. Yeah. Well, good evening. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Dr. Linda Jeffrey, and we're going to be talking about what's happening to the military. Now, the Dr. Jeffrey works with our good friend, Colonel Ron Ray. And she really does the research for him and helps a great deal in many of the cases he presents. That some of these cases have been presented to the Supreme Court or been used in material that was argued before the Supreme Court. And we're really talking about the fact that America is under spiritual attack today. One only has to look and note that we have well over 2 million Americans in prison today. Now, proportional to other countries, certainly, we have more people in prison than any other country in the world. Certainly, China probably has more people in prison, but proportional to their population, we have more than they do or any other nation in the world. Why do we have so many people in prison today? And we see declining moral standards in our society. In fact, we are not allowed to mention God or prayer in our schools or post the Ten Commandments, because the Supreme Court has held that if you posted the Ten Commandments, why, the children might read them. And if they read upon them, they might meditate upon them. And if they meditated upon them, they might obey them. And that would be a direct violation of the law of separation between church and state that's so clearly laid out in the First Amendment. At least that's what they would have us believe. But that's not what the First Amendment says. And at every turn, we find there's an organized effort to undermine the religious belief of our people. But nowhere is this more apparent than in our military, which has always, of course, been based upon a certain spiritual element, loyalty to country, God, family, and country. I mean, that was why men went off to fight. But there is an effort to undermine the religious faith of the people in our service institutions. And we're going to be talking with Dr. Jeffrey about that. And how this all fits together, because you see, at one time everybody knew that America was a Christian nation. Everybody knew that we were one nation under God, but that is no longer true. Dr. Jeffrey, thank you so very much for being with us this evening.
Thank you. It's a privilege.
Well, why don't you just give us a little bit of background? Certainly your PhD is in education, but how did you end up working as a researcher for Colonel Ray?
I saw an article in the newspaper that described him as an attorney interested in history. And I had spent 14 years in college, was just finishing up my doctorate, and realized that I didn't know anything about American history. I called and made an appointment and began to talk to him about the work at First Principles. And I have been there for 6 years, and it has been a delight to learn about our law and about America and its true history and the wonder of God's providence as one nation under God.
And, of course, for those of you who don't know, Colonel Ray, a personal friend of ours, retired Marine Corps colonel and attorney, who, of course, served in Vietnam as an infantry officer in the Marine Corps. And then, of course, retired from the Marine Corps as a full colonel. He was Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration. He served on presidential panels. He certainly has presented cases and information that has been used in appeals at the appearances before the Supreme Court. And a wonderful student of history, knowing full well the fact that America is under attack today because Christianity is under attack. Well, with that as a background, why don't you just sort of pick up the story? You've went to work for Colonel Ray, and of course he is dealing with this constant attack on prayer and religious belief within the military. So why don't you pick up the story there?
Well, just a couple of weeks ago, the New York Times published an article called "The Struggle to Gauge a War's Psychological Cost." And that article caught my attention because we have been looking at how prayer has been used in the military for over 200 years. You know, right after World War II, the social sciences did a research project. It was the largest of its kind in the history of our nation. And they identified the soldier's number one source of combat motivation. And they discovered that 70% of men in the Pacific Theater and 83% of men in the Mediterranean Theater during World War II said the number one source of motivation in combat was prayer. It's interesting in the last few weeks how the Air Force Academy has been in the news because the cadets there are encouraged to pray, and prayer is being systematically removed from our military through directives and new restrictions that are completely foreign to our American way of life.
And, of course, this is because our military is under attack from within, because they realize if they can destroy the religious beliefs of our fighting men, they can destroy our military. But the average individual doesn't understand the relationship between the survival of our nation as a free society under God and the survival of our military, and what's taking place in our service academies today. Certainly they went after prayer at the Citadel, they went after prayer at the Virginia Military Academy, they're after prayer in the Naval Academy and in the Air Force Academy. And are they going to be able to get prayer out of the Air Force?
Well, the military is the last institution in America to hold on to some of our most traditional and cherished values. You know, they have gotten prayer out of education. They've thrown it out of the workplace. They have replaced our Christian values in so many places. But in the military, this has not been the case up until now. So the military is certainly a focus of attack for those that want to remove all vestiges of our history and of the truth that has made our nation great.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Linda Jeffrey. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Jeffrey is just saying that certainly they have done an excellent job of taking God out of our schools and out of our educational system and God out of our courts. And see, there is really a conscious effort to remove the religious foundation of this country, because our country was unique from all other countries, where we acknowledge that freedom didn't come from the government, from the king or the ruler, the feudal lord, or the emperor. Our freedom came from God. And because we had these God-given rights, men joined together and voluntarily gave a government certain rights, and those were, of course, only given to government to preserve our God-given rights. That's what the Declaration of Independence says. But there are those who would establish a tyranny in this country. And so bit by bit, over a period of several generations, they've been working to destroy the religious foundation of America. One time, everybody in the world knew America was a Christian nation. And yet, if anybody were to get up in Congress today and say this is a Christian nation, or in the Senate, they would be viciously attacked by the entire media, which is owned by people who hate the God of the Bible.
Well, the consequence of being a Christian nation has been up to this point that our source of truth, the truth that establishes our laws, the truth that establishes our public policy, is based on the absolutes of right and wrong found in the Old and New Testaments. That is what those who want to break down the old order of America are trying to remove, those absolute foundations of right and wrong, because they want no restraint. Their idea of absolute freedom is licentiousness. And part of the research that I have done with First Principles over the last 5 years has been to look at the criminal law, which was clearly based on the common law on the Old and New Testaments. It had a system of absolute rights and wrongs, and man was responsible for his behavior. We were self-governed. That is a basic tenet of our American way of life, that man had the capacity to know right and wrong and to govern himself. So back in the 50s, when there was so much turmoil and America was changing so rapidly after World War II, the American Law Institute developed a model criminal code and sent it to the states. Now, our criminal code had to be changed from state to state. Each state has a unique code. So they developed a model that they sent out, and it was a direct attack on concepts of absolute right and wrong.
Well, now, who were these people who sent out this report?
Well, there was an article published in the Harvard Law Review written by a man named Herbert Wechsler, and he was the chief reporter for the American Law Institute. They were funded by the Rockefeller Foundation.
Uh-huh. The Rockefeller Foundation raises its ugly head again.
You're not surprised, right?
Well, of course, they funded everything bad in this country, and that's one thing the American people don't understand, from Kinsey, to all sorts of other crazy sorts of things. They've done everything they can since they were the inception of the Rockefeller Foundation to undermine America, to encourage communism and socialism and depravity and internationalism, because, of course, as David Rockefeller said, some men are born to rule and most men are born to be ruled. He told that to my good friend Congressman Dannemeyer. And what they really want is a dictatorship under the wealthy, under the control of people like David Rockefeller, who both of his daughters, incidentally, according to his memoirs, are dedicated Marxists and supporters of Fidel Castro. If you want to check that out, it's David Rockefeller's memoirs. Why would they be supporters of Castro? Because he's the ideal tyrant. Exactly what they support.
Well, the foundations were investigated by Congress back in 1954, as I'm sure you're aware. Congressman B. Carroll Reese of Tennessee was head of a committee who took a look, a very close look, at where this foundation money was going and what it was doing to America. And he discovered that the foundations were supporting social scientists like Kinsey and others, and they were promoting a new way of life in which there were no absolutes, there is no right and wrong, everything is morally relative, it eliminated all standards of conduct, and it had a profound effect on the law. The writers of the Model Penal Code depended very heavily on Kinsey's bogus data to throw out our laws that protected women and children. And they depended also very heavily on the social scientists, the psychiatrists and psychologists. Manfred Guttmacher was the head of a group called the Group for the Advancement of Psychiatry. Now, Guttmacher is a name that might be familiar to your regular listeners, because his brother, Alfred Guttmacher, was a founder of Planned Parenthood. So they were two eggs from the same basket. And Manfred Guttmacher wrote 20 pages of correspondence to Wechsler regarding a new definition of criminal responsibility. And what he said was, we can no longer be self-governed, and a criminal needs to know more than right and wrong in order to determine whether he's a criminal or not. we need to understand whether the criminal was able to control himself. So this became a new definition for evaluating a criminal. Not only did he need to know that the act was wrong, but he had to be able to control himself. Now, the Constitution provides for a jury of one's peers to judge a criminal. But a jury of one's peers cannot decide what's going on in the mind of a criminal. How do they know whether he was able to control himself? Well, you need a psychological expert that begins to look at these mental processes, and they begin to make judgments about, you know, his environment and his past. And they believe not that the heart is desperately wicked and that we need to practice restraint and that we need to restrain those who are not self-governed. They believe that more education, more therapy, more treatment could actually cure criminal behavior. And it was as a result of the Model Penal Code that criminal behavior became almost like a sickness to be cured. In the 50s, Menninger published a book called The Crime of Punishment. And in that book, he advocated that we should no longer punish criminals, but we should help them and cure them of their illness.
And, of course, the whole idea that you went to prison to be punished for your crime, that was sort of thrown off with the dishwater, and they came up with all these other crazy liberals' ideas that we can simply make these people better if we're just nice to them.
Let me tell you, it's not only a crazy idea, it is an expensive idea. And every taxpayer in America should be demanding accountability of these therapeutic programs. In 1996, the Government Accounting Office took a look at 500 programs that treated violent sexual predators. These programs spanned 50 years. And in those 500 programs, they could not identify a single program that could show definitively that it reduced recidivism.
We had a very famous case here in California. It was a little girl named Megan who was stolen out of her bedroom where several other girls were sleeping and taken out and sexually molested and killed by a child molester who had been arrested 35 different times and let go 35 different times. And he was a well-known violent predator.
And unfortunately, that's not an exception.
And this is the incredible sort of madness. Either the people who are advocating this are stupid or truly diabolical. And that's, of course, the basis of what we have in California, known as Megan's Law. Go ahead, pick up the story there, Doc, because this is so frustrating when we stop and think about it. And it is because of this that the tempo of violence is increasing. And we have over 2 million Americans in prison today. And among the black community, one of every three young black men is either in prison, on probation, or parole. That is either a totally failed judicial system, or something diabolical to corrupt one specific race in our society.
It is because they are looking at the offender's personality, and they have relieved him of his individual responsibility. We now have parole boards. We have intensive in-house treatment centers for criminals that are supposed to cure them of their criminal behavior. And we have gotten away from demanding that the punishment should fit the crime, not the offender's personality. And the issue is not the safety of society. The issue is also deterrence and demanding that people be responsible for their individual behavior. In order to throw out absolute rights and wrongs, you have to take away the stigma of wrong. And that is one thing that bringing therapy into corrections has done. It has eliminated that individual responsibility.
And it's also in the process of destroying our society because our children are not taught absolutes in school. In fact, you know, the children are taught there are no absolutes in school. Why? Because they're taught there is no God, and that is the very essence of what it's all about. You know, until people understand that there is an attack on God, there is a conspiracy against God. Nothing makes any sense. You know, all you need to do is look at the Bible. I think it says Jeremiah 11:9, Ezekiel 22:25, the second Psalm. They talk about the conspiracy against God. It's there. It's real. It's being played out before us today, whether it be, at VMI, where they want to take God and prayer out of the sessions there, or at the Citadel, or the Air Force Academy. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to understand what this is all about. And we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Linda Jeffery to talk more about this attack, which is at the very foundation of our society. Because we're either a nation under God, or we will certainly not be a free nation at all. Dr. Jeffery, pick up the story.
I want to comment on our school children. I have 5 children of my own, so this is an issue that is very close to my heart. And, when compulsory education began, the Bible was the textbook for teaching. And they were not trying to teach religion. They were trying to teach truth. And the Bible was the source of truth. If you're familiar with what happened in Germany to begin the movement of experimental psychology, a man named Wilhelm Wundt, it's described in a wonderful little book called The Leipzig Connection. I would recommend that book to all of your listeners. And it's a book you can read in just a couple of hours, but it describes how experimental psychology was developed in Germany. And a man named G. Stanley Hall, he was one of the first Americans who went to Germany to study this experimental psychology. Now, no one knows Hall's name, but everyone knows the name of one of his students. He came to Johns Hopkins University, and one of his first students was a man named John Dewey. And, of course, Dewey is known as the father of American education, and he brought this experimental psychology into our educational system, and that eliminated the study of the Bible. It has eliminated the understanding of facts, the understanding of history. Back in 1964, the National Education Association announced that we would no longer be studying history and civics, but those would be replaced by the social sciences, and children would be taught sociology and psychology. And I have been amazed to look at the social studies program here in Kentucky. The core content for our social studies program is on the Internet. It's available through the Kentucky Department of Education. Anyone can pull it up and read the assessment statements on which our children here are tested. It's posted at the Kentucky State Department of Education website. And as you read through the requirements that our children are supposed to learn, it is amazing. The only thing that is missing is facts. Here is a statement from our core assessment. The Constitution of the U.S. is a flexible document that changes and is interpreted over time to meet the needs of its citizens.
Because that has no basics in fact at all, because if it can be changed by interpretation, then we have a nation of men, of judges, and 9 judges, or maybe even 5 judges, can change the entire course of our nation. That is a blatant untruth, and yet that's what they're teaching in our schools today.
Here's another example. Democratic governments preserve and protect the rights and liberties of their constituents through different sources, such as the UN Charter, the Declaration of the Rights of Man, the UN Declaration of Human Rights, and the U.S. Constitution.
Well, Chris, where does the United Nations come to have anything to do with here? Ask the people of Rwanda what they think about the United Nations and how it protected their rights during the massacre there. When it was the United Nations officials that ordered the UN forces that were there not to intervene and let the massacre of almost 10,000 people a day continue. Thanks to Kofi Annan, who is the man directly responsible. So these ideas, you know, that they're implanting in the minds of our children, that we can look to the United Nations for guidance, are simply part of the effort to undermine the fabric of our freedom.
Well, do you believe that?
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Dr. Linda Jeffery. And Dr. Jeffery is simply pointing out that if you look at the texts that are being used and the concepts are being introduced into the minds of the children in Kentucky where she lives, they're being told, of course, you know, that our freedoms are protected by the United Nations Charter and the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights and such things, and by the Constitution as well. Where do they get off saying the United Nations has anything to do about America? I mean, most of the countries in the United Nations are ruthless and tyrannical, you know, countries where sometimes the people there and the United Nations even eat one another. We have cannibalism still existing among certain the upper echelons of the United Nations, when Idi Amin, who was a cannibal, addressed the United Nations, he got astounding ovation. Are these the people who are going to protect the rights of the people? You pick up the story there, Linda.
Here is an example from our administration. The Bush administration has begun issuing grants to help spread a UN-sponsored school program that aims to become a universal curriculum for teaching global citizenship, peace studies, and equality of world cultures. The U.S. Department of Education has issued a $1.2 million grant to implement the program. That was reported on January 21, 2003. So this is what is being taught in our schools. America is no longer the world's best hope. We are simply a government among governments, all of which are equal, and children are not taught about a single hero. They are not taught the facts of our history. They are taught to get along with one another. Dewey believed that high literacy will cause people to be independent, and that will cause antisocial behavior.
But then he really wanted to dumb down our children, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He wanted everyone to get along. That was his goal for education, which, of course, comes out of the German school of psychology. It's all about peer interaction, and children would be conditioned to cooperate with one another, and these are the activities that would be rewarded. And they would no longer focus on learning facts and the reading, writing, arithmetic. You know, the old-fashioned educational curriculum is gone.
And it was really so interesting. There was an article in the paper the other day, I think it was in Tennessee, where the people in Tennessee were just so happy because their fourth and eighth graders were doing so well, and you know, they were getting, you know, in the 87-88% on average in the mathematics, and then of course they were retested by the federal government. They were 21%. They were all failing. Their kids are non-competitive. They cannot really survive in a competitive world and compete with children from other countries where they push excellence here, they push mediocrity, and the average parent doesn't know. Charlie's getting straight A's. But they're not getting educated. They don't understand history. They know far more about sex than they know about Shakespeare.
That's absolutely right. The humanists, are a part of the secular psychologists who have come into our schools, wrote an article in their magazine in 1983, and they said the battle for humankind's future must be waged and won in the public school classroom by teachers who correctly view their role as the proselytizers of a new faith. So secular humanism has become a faith, and the curriculum has become an indoctrination, a propaganda to make our children docile, cooperative, and unquestioning about what is happening. And they are being presented with socialism and with world government. They're being taught that America is a nation of white male oppressors, and the history, the real history, is being lost.
Well, what a great tragedy is this. Let's say there's not one in a thousand children who can tell you the real difference between a republic and a democracy. They all believe we're a democracy, and yet our founding fathers abhorred the idea of democracy, knowing full well it would eventually lead to a dictatorship, and it would eventually lead to financial collapse. And as Plato had said so well, democracy always degenerates into despotism. The people who are pushing democracy know that. because they have a different agenda. They believe in a ruling elite that will control us from the cradle to the grave. What's happening is not happening by accident. Happening as part of a long-range plan that goes back to the Frankfurt School and, of course, these various people that Dr. Jeffrey is talking about. You need to get her material. And is some of that up on your webpage there, of the Diverse Principles Press?
Yes, firstprinciplespress.org.
Give that, that address one more time.
www.firstprinciplespress.org.
Wonderful source of information. So we'll be back here in just a moment to talk more about this and to understand that America is under attack today. We are either a nation under God or a nation under tyranny. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course there's been a lot of talk recently about a lot of the major mercantile chains, a lot of the major stores in America, telling their employees not to use the word Merry Christmas, but talking to people, they were to say Happy Holiday, and of course the tree there in the nation's capital was no longer a Christmas tree, it was a holiday tree. In fact, to his credit, Dennis Hassert, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, said, "This is a lot of foolishness. This is a Christmas tree, not a holiday tree." But you cannot understand anything going on unless you understand that this is all coordinated, that people know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the public to understand that there is an attack on Christianity and on anyone who really believes in the God of the Bible. So pick up the story there, please, Linda.
You know, the Supreme Court has, of course, been central to this battle, and the recent Ten Commandments case, which you talked with Colonel Ray about recently, highlighted some of the ways in which the Supreme Court has distorted our Christian history. One of those ways is by bringing in international law for the first time.
Why don't you tell our listeners about that Kentucky case? Because I know that the colonel was involved in that. I'm sure you were as well. What was the Kentucky case that went before the Supreme Court really all about?
It was about history. The documents that were posted in the McCreary County Courthouse were the Declaration of Independence, were a quote by President Lincoln. The Ten Commandments were posted, but they were posted as part of the congressional record. In 1983, President Reagan declared that year the year of the Bible, and the congressional record is published with tax funds and is supposed to be available to all of the people. And a judge here in Kentucky had the audacity to say that because the Declaration of Independence was hanging on the wall and referred to our Creator, that it was somehow a religious document.
But of course the Supreme Court agreed with him. That is the incredible thing.
It is incredible. But look at, for example, Sandra Day O'Connor. She says that the meaning of the separation of church and state is that Americans should only be able to mention God in public as a matter of, her term is ceremonial deism.
And of course, she remembers she was appointed by Ronald Reagan, that great conservative president. We all know that, I guess it sucks, it was just a mistake. But he if you look at it very carefully, he made an awful lot of mistakes, but we never talk about those. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and go right ahead, pick up the story there.
The Newdow case, everyone has heard the name Newdow. He's the atheist out there in California in the Elk Grove School District who is trying to remove Under God from our pledge and In God We Trust from our money. And in the case where the Supreme Court actually threw out the case because he did not have custody of his child. Nevertheless, Sandra Day O'Connor wrote an opinion in that case in which she severely restricted our privileges as a nation to acknowledge in historical documents that we are one nation under God. One of the wonderful pieces of research that we have done at First Principles Press, which is available on our website is a history of prayer in the military. And the stories that we discovered, the facts of history that we discovered, are absolutely amazing. If you look at the inaugural addresses of the presidents, you will find that every commander-in-chief in the history of this nation, without exception, has acknowledged God's providence and the need for our nation to look to God as a source of strength.
That's every president in every one of his inaugural addresses has done that. But that, of course, is never brought out by the media.
Oh, they wouldn't mention that at all.
Because, you see, there are people within the media who hate the God of the Bible. And our media has been taken over. Not only that, but certainly every state constitution, all 50 of them, mention God. How could that possibly be? Well, that's the truth of the matter is that, you know, certainly the Congress opens with a prayer and the Senate opens with a prayer and even the Supreme Court opens when the choir comes in and says, God save the United States and this honorable court. Why don't they outlaw that? Oh, well, that's ceremonial deism. No, it isn't. That's how it's always been because, of course, our freedoms came from God and the Supreme Court justices know that. They just don't want the American people to know that.
That's right, and the Declaration of Independence also talks about the supreme ruler of the universe. We have not only acknowledged that he is the God of America, but he is the one true God, and America is in subjection to him. That is clear from all of our founding documents. You know, when the Supreme Court has ruled four times that America is a Christian nation, and the most famous court case is the Holy Trinity Church case in 1891, and the Supreme Court took several months to issue their opinion, and the reason it took them so long is they went all the way back to 1492 and all the way forward to their present, and they looked at over 400 organic utterances, the foundational documents and speeches and the official history of the United States of America, and they declared that without exception, everything that they looked at pointed to the fact that America is a Christian nation. There was no question how far we've come in a century.
Well, the thing is there's been an organized effort not to teach the history. There's been an organized effort to undermine the religious foundation of America, which is why we have more people proportional in our prisons than any other country in the world. We are no longer the freest nation in the world either. And now, of course, we find increasingly video cameras being set up on every corner, of course, to protect us from the wicked Osama bin Laden. We're giving the government increased opportunity and right to search our homes without a warrant, without our knowledge, and to tap our telephones and read our emails and our faxes. All of this is happening in what was once a free country. But there's no instance in all history where a nation has turned against God, and that nation has maintained its freedom. And as William Penn had said so well, those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. And that's exactly where we're headed today.
That's true.
Go right ahead there, Linda.
Let me talk a little bit more about our research that is also available at First Principles Press. We have a link there to the RSVP America website. And in the RSVP America campaign, which began with the research of Dr. Judith Reisman, who exposed the Kinsey reports as fraud and the criminally derived data that he published of children being molested in the name of science. We looked at that data and realized its impact on the law. And we began to look from state to state. We began with a six-state survey. And we discovered some very amazing things that were changing in the law. You know, our laws used to recognize that man is a unique creature, that he's endowed by a creator. But now, in law and in education, man is just another mammal. We used to recognize that the Bible is the absolute source of truth, but now science has become the exclusive source of truth. And that's not natural science. You know, there there is a science that we learn by examining the world that God created, and it reveals truth when we examine those things. But experimental science is a completely different kind of study. It is subjective. It is biased, and it is led by people who want to wipe God out of our history and out of existence. One of the tenets of humanism that is so destructive to our law and our public policy is the idea that man's nature is inherently good. The common law was based on the fact that man's heart is deceitful and desperately wicked.
But that, of course, was a biblical concept, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And what is the humanist concept? Man is basically good. The other is the biblical concept that man is basically evil and wicked. What is the humanist concept? That there are no absolutes. The Bible said there is absolutes. There is right and wrong.
Let me give you an example of a public policy outcome that is based on that premise. For the last 15 years, over and over in the newspapers, we have read about a sexual assault crisis in the military. And, of course, bringing women into combat arms and bringing them into the academies where young men and women are placed together, and this problem has increased. So if the solution is based on the humanist idea that man is good, then the solution is education. So we will have training programs, we will have prevention programs, we will have victim advocacy programs. All of these programs are being implemented in the military as we speak at a cost of several million dollars to the American taxpayer. Now, what if we address this problem based on the truth that man's heart is wicked, and that man needs to practice self-government, that we need virtue in our society? Title 10 of the United States Code, it deals with military law. And in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, you'll find that an officer is required to maintain a standard of virtue, honor, and patriotism and subordination. He is to be vigilant in inspecting those under his command. And he is to suppress all immoral and dissolute behavior.
And this
that
idea
recognizes
of, this idea of virtue is so foreign to America today. At one time, we were a virtuous nation, and we had people of virtue in key positions, men who feared God. But that's no longer the case.
Well, that is the solution in our military to the present crisis. We need to demand a standard of virtue. That honor would mean something again, that virtue would mean something again. You know, one of the things that Kinsey did in his destructive writing was to eliminate a social virtue. He made everyone an individual with complete freedom to do as they pleased. They really weren't harming one another. And look at the statistics. From 1950 to 2000, violent crime has increased 993%. I mean, I remember shopping with my grandmother at Christmas time in downtown Akron, Ohio, and we would walk downtown to look at the windows down at Macy's. There is no one walking downtown in Akron at this hour, I can assure you. And that's true of every major city in America. We are no longer safe. And it is because social virtue has been eliminated. It's been eliminated in the law, and it has been eliminated as a concept that our society understands.
And I agree with you totally. And it is because this nation is turned against God, and it is a direct result of the Supreme Court decisions. And they knew back in 1962, when they took God and prayer out of our schools, exactly where we were going. Only they didn't want the public to know that those wicked men on our Supreme Court, who had an agenda we're going to destroy the very foundation of this country. What a better way to destroy a nation than to infiltrate your people into the key positions and then destroy the very fabric of our society, starting out by taking God and prayer out of our schools and the Ten Commandments, and of course doing everything, restricting the ability of the local community to maintain any level of moral standards. That was the key to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., and we would determine at the national level what the moral standards were. And look at the moral standards that we have.
Well, the public policy in the schools regarding sex education is based on this same tenet, that man is good. In order to improve his life, you educate, educate, educate. And that is the approach that they have taken to sex education. When sex education was originally introduced in the schools, they said it would eliminate sex crime. You would simply teach children what is healthy and good, and that it would make children behave better. It has done exactly the opposite.
And today in the United States, according to the CDC statistics, which we'll provide to anybody who wants to see them, there are 65 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease. Let me repeat that. 65 million Americans with a sexually transmitted viral disease, a direct result of the sex education in our schools, which was talk about sex and talk about sex and talk about sex and destroy modesty and destroy embarrassment. And you had, you know, certainly integrated boys and girls together in the same class. They knew what they were doing. They knew what had happened when they introduced these programs in Switzerland. The incidence of illicit sex skyrocketed, as did illicit pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases, and that's why they brought them to America in the mid-1960s.
The example that I like to give is take a first grader. They're out on the playground on the swing. You go to that first grader and you say, you cannot swing on that swing until you can name the scientific name for every bone in your body. Because if you don't know where your tibia and your fibula is, then you might fall off that swing and break your tibia. So you must learn the exact terms, you know, in the first grade in order to protect you from falling off that swing and breaking a bone. Well, that's absolutely absurd. But that is exactly the approach that sex educators have taken in order to coarsen our young children's minds and to destroy their modesty before they know what is happening. And the well-meaning people have said to me, well, they should know the right terms, or they should know the scientific names. No, they should be protected. Their innocence should be protected, and their modesty should be protected. And parents should teach their children. They do not need to have discussions in a public classroom.
And certainly not in kindergarten, where they're starting to teach them that homosexuality is perfectly normal. And they're doing that right here in California at the present time.
It's happening all over the United States. And not only are they teaching homosexuality, but they are using pornography. They are using drawings, explicit drawings and pictures, and exposing our children's minds to unspeakable perversions in the name of freedom.
And this is the same thing that happened in ancient Greece, and it happened in ancient Rome. And I believe that there are certain people who know exactly what they're doing. Some people, liberals, think this is really great, but, you know, the trouble is that it is going to destroy our society, and as it was in ancient Rome, so it will be in America. Only we're not going to have to wait 100 years to see it happen. It's happening before our very eyes.
Well, Doctor, I believe in miracles. You know, there are still people who know how to call upon the name of God, and I believe in the promise of Second Chronicles, that if we repent and turn from our wickedness and call upon God's name, that He will heal our land. And these are desperate times.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Well, let's go to Dan, who's calling from Spokane. And Dan, did you have a question?
I'm just curious, what both of your visions of what America and American education should look like.
I see. Well, no, wait a minute. We're talking about what America was, what it's become. What sort of America do you want?
I kind of like America the way it is.
I see, friend. Where does freedom come from?
freedom
Well, we have Dan, who's a history. You're a history professor.
I am.
I see. Fine. Okay. Fine. We've got about a minute and a half, and because we're just about the end of the program. Go ahead. What would you like to say?
Well, I just wanted to ask your guest, I guess, what is her sort of vision of the American education system? What would she like to see taught, and what would she like to see changed? So, kind of a throwback to the. I mean, she's kind of been pro Dewey and anti Dewey in the same statement. Anti Dewey in the fact that. Shouldn't have group work and so on, but yet then she's anti-Kinsey and saying that, you know, we should learn to get along with other people and be open. So I'm not really sure what kind of education system she wants.
All right, what sort of education would you like to have, Dr. Jeffrey?
American history should be taught from our foundational documents. It should begin with the Declaration of Independence. Students should study the Constitution.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.